Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, October 4th, 2023. Authorities in South Sudan say hundreds of refugees are returning from Uganda due to lack of food at refugee camps.
I receive a line-up, 444. The return is coming, but these are people like scattered, like nothing can do even. Of course, when they enter to the Fayam, then they scatter to the various governments. And some of them enter to the county, in the county, they go to the various places where they have their relatives.
And Pope Francis is meeting with his bishops, clergy, laymen, and women to discuss issues in the Catholic Church.
The Pope added, "We are not here to carry out a parliamentary meeting or a plan of reformation. The synod," he said, "is not a parliament."
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in Budi County of South Sudan's eastern Equatorial State say more than 400 refugees have freely returned to their villages over the past 2 weeks. The head of the government's Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in eastern Equatorial State is appealing for support to feed the returnees. For VOA News, Lucy Pony reports from Nairobi.
Lotuke Payam Administrator Arcangelo Loyaka says hundreds of returnees from refugee camps in Uganda arrived in his Payam.
I receive line up 444. The returnees coming, but these are people like scattered. They are at this time, it is raining, and the rain came late, and nothing can do even. Of course, when they enter to the Fayam, then they scatter to the various bombers. The various bombers, some of them enter to the county. In the county, they go to the various places where they have their relatives.
Loyaka says the returnees fled camps in neighboring Uganda due to hunger, adding that he expects the numbers to increase in the coming days.
There's no food. There's a shortage of the food in Alabama. That's what made them decide to come. And also, at the same time, the people who have been there and the students who have been there, I think maybe the government of Uganda, they decide to stay. They tell them to stay, and they have no money to pay.
The administrator of Mogiri Payam in Budi County told VOA the number of returnees is increasing daily. Raphael Lokiru warns the returnees could continue to face food shortages due to a poor harvest in the area.
We actually experienced a lot of influx. We think there is a problem in the camp, especially in our side of Palabet. So there is a military federation. You know, the boys are coming, you know, the problem when we interview them, but they say the hunger and other things. In the ratio and the condition in the camp is not all that
Augustine Okuma, head of the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Eastern Equatorial State, says the returnees are arriving in droves, further impacting few services in the area. Okuma adds that the humanitarian situation in the state is dire and people are migrating to other villages in search of water and food.
They are moving because of the impact of climate change. Last year they had flood and this year they have drought. There's nothing completely. People are just depending on wild food and grasses. When you go to the side of Kapueta East County, it is also the same. All the seven counties are in their humanitarian need of food assistance.
21-year-old Simon Lodak, who has just returned from Uganda, is urging the state government to provide food and education services.
I have come because of hunger and also because of school fees. I'm now in my grandmother's home in the village. I'm just here. I can ask them to bring for us something that can sustain us and also some money for school fees.
Okuma is calling on the national government and aid agencies to provide urgent food aid for the returnees. Text messages and phone calls to the head of external relations at UNHCR for comments were not answered. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Nairobi, Kenya.
From Nairobi, we move to Geneva, where the World Health Organization approved a second malaria vaccine Monday. It is hoped the new drug will quickly be rolled out in countries across Africa, including South Sudan, where malaria is still the number one killer disease. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
A new malaria vaccine known as R21 was developed by Britain's Oxford University along with the Serum Institute of India. It is already in use in Ghana and Burkina Faso. The World Health Organization approved the drug Monday, paving the way for its wider rollout. Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus is Director General of the World Health Organization.
Yes, with seasonal transmission, it reduced symptomatic cases of malaria by 75% in the 12 months following a three-dose series of the vaccine. A fourth dose given a year after the third was shown to maintain protection.
The WHO approved the first ever malaria vaccine in 2021, known as RTSS.
As a malaria researcher, I used to dream of the day when we would have a safe and effective vaccine against malaria. Now we have two.
The WHO says there is little difference in effectiveness between the two vaccines, but the new R21 vaccine is cheaper to make at around $2 to $4 a dose, with each patient needing four doses, about half the price of RTSS. The new vaccine can also be made in much greater volumes. The Serum Institute of India is already in line to make 100 million doses a year, with plans to double that output. Experts warn that it won't beat malaria on its own, and that other preventative measures are needed, including mosquito nets. Azra Ghani is an epidemiologist and professor at Imperial College London.
So this additional efficacy of the vaccine is in the presence of this really important intervention. The second is something known as chemoprevention. That's providing drugs to children in high-risk areas where malaria is particularly seasonal.
There were an estimated 247 million cases of malaria in 2021, a small increase on the previous year, and 619,000 deaths, mostly children, in sub-Saharan Africa. Ghani expects the new vaccine to have a major impact.
We do hope that this, by introducing this new vaccine, we can really make a dent in this and get us back on track to the goals which were set by the WHO to reduce malaria by 90% by 2030.
The WHO also approved a new vaccine Monday against dengue fever, another mosquito-borne disease common in tropical Latin American and Asian countries. The drug, made by the Japanese firm Takeda, was about 84% effective in preventing people from being hospitalised in clinical trials. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
The Congolese Nobel Peace Prize winner, Dr. Denis Mukwege, announced he will run for president in the Democratic Republic of Congo's election in December. Opinions on his candidacy are divided among the people of Eastern DRC, where he was born. Reporter Zenami Neti Zaidi has more from Goma.
The winner of the 2018 Nobel Peace Prize, Dr. Denis Mukwege, says his announcement is in response to the public's desire for a leader who can bring change. He says his country is certainly in a bad way. There is a high risk that it could disappear from the map of the world, but this fate is not inevitable. Tomorrow will be too late, so he says the time is now, and that's why he's contesting the elections. His candidacy is welcomed by many in the east of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Many appreciate the 68-year-old doctor's successful effort to end sexual violence as a weapon of war, his criticism of impunity for war crimes, and his reputation as a strident government critic. But some voters are perplexed, including Lawrence Muhira, a young student at the University of Goma. She fears that the new path now taken by the man who repairs women as his clone will make him forget his long-standing struggle.
Vous savez bien que notre pays est caractérisé par des conflits depuis plus de
She says you are well aware that our country has been characterized by conflict for over two decades, and women have always been the main victims. Denis Mukwege is one of those who have never stopped supporting victims until today. I think that his involvement in politics will impact his fight for the well-being of these women victims, because it's often said that it's impossible to serve two masters as once. According to the young political analyst Leonard Rwangano, Denis Mukwege's reputation in politics, which is still clean, would only help him win the presidential elections if the opposition came together and selected him their single candidate. If not, nothing will go right for him. He says in the current climate, Mukwege is out of luck. He is saying this not because he is not popular, but because the opposition is divided. The outgoing president will face between two and five opponents, and if all them unite and all opposition supporters vote for the one candidate, then he could win, especially as he has never committed atrocities like the others. The candidacies of Denis Mukwege and Martin Fayulu could already be submitted to the Independent National Electoral Commission on Wednesday, a process that is in its final week. For VOA Africa, I'm Zane Mneti Zaidi in Goma.
DRC President Felix Tshisekedi, Martin Fayulu, who leads the Engagement for Citizenship and Development Party, and Moise Katumbi, the head of the Assembly Pour la République Party, also will be candidates in the December 20th presidential elections. In Haiti, there is news that the United Nations has authorized a one-year deployment of a Kenyan-led force to the country to help quell violent gangs is dominating conversation. Wensley Johnson, a construction worker in Haiti, said it's like God heard Haiti's prayers and he's sending help. Johnson had to flee his home this year after gangs pillaged the community where he lived. Carpenter Peter John said he hoped the Kenyan reinforcement would come before January to stop the murders and rapes committed by gang members. More than 200,000 Haitians have lost their homes to gangs who set fire to communities and rape and kill residents in a bid to wrestle territorial from rival gangs. In the meantime, John said Haitians will take care of gangs the only way they know, though a violent uprising known as Boakali, which has killed an estimated 350 people since it began in April. The Associated Press says the United Nations estimates more than 2,400 people were killed in gang violence from January through mid-August this year, with nearly 1,000 kidnapped and more than 900 wounded. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, Pope Francis meets with his bishops from around the world. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the funniest thing to ever happen to you?
I was thinking I can cross a gutter. Unfortunately, I found myself in the gutter and everybody was laughing.
The funniest thing to ever happen to me was when I fell down in the marketplace and people were laughing. It became funny to me because I just slipped.
A lot has happened to me, but what I remember, being with my family, discussing, they get to tell me funny stories that make me happy.
The funniest thing that has ever happened to me is moving from the house, picking a vehicle, realizing I don't have money on me. How embarrassing to realize there's nothing on me, just moving out like that.
I tried to like ask somebody for money and I tried to like fix something and it didn't work. Well, I was ashamed.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. For the first time in U.S. history, a Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, who is the second in line in presidential line of succession, has been removed from office, facing a challenge from his own party. Republican Kevin McCarthy failed to remain Speaker by a vote of 216 to 210. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
An extraordinary moment in American politics. For the first time ever, the leader of the U.S. House of Representatives has been removed from power.
Speaker of the House of the United States House of Representatives is hereby declared vacant.
Republican Representative Matt Gaetz forced a vote on removing McCarthy, expressing frustration at McCarthy's leadership after he failed to pass a government funding bill last week with conservative spending priorities. Republican Representative Matt Gaetz.
I think $33 trillion in debt is chaos. I think that facing a $2.2 trillion annual deficit is chaos. I think that not passing single subject spending bills is chaos.
McCarthy told reporters he would not run again for the role of Speaker.
I can continue to fight, maybe in a different manner. I will not run for Speaker again.
But the slim Republican majority in the House meant that Gaetz needed only 8 Republican votes, along with all Democrats, to oust McCarthy, who faced increasing criticism since agreeing to a debt ceiling deal earlier this year with President Joe Biden. Republican Representative Bob Good.
Many of us had begged the Speaker, pleaded with the Speaker repeatedly to utilize the debt ceiling to leverage spending cuts and reforms. But instead, he negotiated an unlimited increase to the debt ceiling.
Although the majority of Republicans voted to keep McCarthy in leadership, Republican Representative Tom Cole.
Think long and hard before you plunge us into chaos, because that's where we're headed if we vacate the speakership.
It was the votes of Democrats uniting to remove McCarthy that made the difference. Democratic Representative Pramila Jayapal.
We're not voting in any way that would help save Speaker McCarthy.
Democratic Representative Annie Custer.
He is not trustworthy, and I think you can see that within his own caucus, but you can certainly see it the way he's treated us and the American people.
The historic upheaval in the U.S. House comes at a key moment. The short-term government funding deal did not include U.S. aid to Ukraine. National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby.
All the House leadership is supportive of continuing to help Ukraine. And the vast majority of House members on the Republican side are in support of continuing to help Ukraine. There's a small number of very vocal, a small minority of vocal members who are pushing back on that, but they don't represent their party, they don't represent their leadership.
U.S. lawmakers will hold elections next week for a new Speaker of the House, the person who is second in the presidential line of succession. Catherine Gibson, VOA News.
A charity group in Zimbabwe is raising funds for a basic product that is critical for people living with albinism, that is sunscreen. The group called the Noble Hands of Zimbabwe released a report in September saying 1 in 3 people with albinism in Zimbabwe die of skin cancer before the age of 40, including children as young as 8. Columbus Mavunga has more from Harare.
A September report by the charity organization The Noble Hand Zimbabwe says one in three people living with albinism in Zimbabwe die before they reach 40 due to skin cancer. Now Marvelous Chuma, a musician with albinism, is helping non-profit group raise funds for a simple but life-saving resource, sunscreen.
The situation is bad, especially in rural areas.
She says many people with albinism stay in the rural areas, and most of them spend the better part of the day in the sun working in the fields. That exposes their skin and it gets damaged. They don't have the chemicals to tame the heat so that the skin is not burned off. Some don't know what sunscreen is. They never used it, says Chuma. Loveness Mainato is a mother of four, two of them living with albinism.
So the sunscreen lotions are expensive, the cheapest tube being $15 per 200 milliliter tube. So it has been quite difficult to have access to sunscreen lotions.
Mainato hopes things will improve now that the government-funded University of Zimbabwe is manufacturing sunscreen lotions. Joichi Famba is a nano-pharmaceutical scientist and professor at the University of Zimbabwe. He says their lotion will protect people and cost less.
But we have also made sure that the price is quite comparable to what's on the market. In Zimbabwe, a typical sunscreen, for example, the leading brands, I can't mention the names, but they cost between $10 and $20 per bottle. But our unit of SolarGuard is just going for about $5 to $6, which is quite competitive, which is quite affordable to people that have albinism.
According to the World Health Organization, albinism is a hereditary condition in which little or no melanin is produced, causing a lack of pigmentation in the skin, eyes, and hair. Lack of pigmentation, which protects the skin from radiation from the sun, can leave one vulnerable to skin cancer, says the UN Health Agency. Dr. Trevor Kanyowa of the WHO in Zimbabwe says they should limit their exposure to the sun and get professional care.
And they are also encouraged to have a look at themselves, to make a regular self-assessments of their skin. Are they developing any unhealthy patches or lumps, something that may worry them? And I think also one of the things that they can do at the end is also to seek professional care so that they can be examined and taken care of medically.
Early detection allows professionals to better treat diseases such as skin cancer, says the WHO, resulting in fewer deaths. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Pope Francis has opened a synod or a meeting of Roman Catholic bishops from all over the world that this time includes lay people and women. As Sabina Castelfranco reports from Rome, a number of thorny issues are on the agenda over the next few weeks, all behind closed doors.
With a solemn mass in St. Peter's Square Wednesday, Pope Francis formally opened a four-week meeting that gathers 365 select members with voting rights, including lay people and not just bishops. It will also see women voting for the first time. No binding decisions will be made, but controversial topics are up for discussion at the closed-door meeting held in Vatican City's Paul VI Hall. They include the role of ordinary Catholics, including women, in decision-making processes, whether priests should be allowed to marry, and the Church's teachings on divorce and LGBTQ issues. The theme of the meeting is For a Synodal Church, Communion, Participation, Mission. Commentators say it is likely to expose deep divisions between liberals and conservatives in the Roman Catholic Church. In his homily at Wednesday's Mass, Pope Francis said church leaders at the gathering do not need a purely natural vision made up of human strategies, political calculations, or ideological battles.
Non siamo qui per portare avanti una riunione.
The Pope added, we are not here to carry out a parliamentary meeting or a plan of reformation. The synod, he said, is not a parliament. Before the start of discussions, five conservative cardinals called on Pope Francis to reaffirm the Church's doctrine on same-sex couples and the ordination of women. In a letter, they presented five questions and expressed their concern that some in church leadership are no longer proposing sound doctrine, but teachings according to their own likings. In a written response, the pontiff steered away from providing the yes-no answers the cardinal requested, and observers say he appeared to be open to the possibility of blessing same-sex couples. The 86-year-old pontiff said that we cannot be judges who only deny, reject, and exclude. He wrote, pastoral prudence must adequately discern whether there are forms of blessing requested by one or more persons that do not convey a mistaken concept of marriage. At Wednesday's Mass, Pope Francis said the synod aims to reaffirm a church that looks mercifully at humanity and is united and fraternal, that listens and dialogues, a church that blesses and encourages. Ahead of the meeting, Vatican officials said no media would be allowed, and attendees were instructed to not speak to reporters about the discussions. Sabina Castelfranco, VOA News, Rome.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1-202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1-202-630-8011.
And that's all we prepared for you this Wednesday, October 4th, 2023. When I leave you with Lomerica Jazz Band and the song Salam Ya Sudan. Listening to Lomerica Jazz Band and the song Salam Ya Sudan. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, David Greensburg, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Salam, salam, salam.